Nutmeg of Consolation, Aubrey Maturin Series, Book 14, written by Patrick O'Brien and read by Rick Jerram.
Chapter 1. 157 castaways on a desert island in the South China Sea. The survivors of the wreck of HMS Diane, which had struck upon an uncharted rock and had there been shattered by a great typhoon some days later. 157. But as they sat there, round the edge of a flat, bare piece of ground between high water mark and the beginning of the forest, they sounded like the full complement of a ship of the line, for this was Sunday afternoon, and the starboard watch, headed by Captain Aubrey, was engaged in a cricket match against the Marines, under their commanding officer, Mr. Welby. It was a keenly contested match, and one that aroused the strongest passions, so that roaring, hooting, cheers and catcalls followed almost every stroke. And to an impartial observer, it was yet another example of the seaman's power of living intensely in the present, with little or no regard for futurity. A feckless attitude, but one combined with uncommon fortitude, since the atmosphere was as wet as a living sponge, and from behind its clouds the sun was sending down a most oppressive heat. The only impartial observer at hand was Stephen Maturin, the ship's surgeon, who thought cricket the most tedious occupation known to man, and who was now slowly climbing away from it, through the forest that covered the island, with the intention, first, of killing a boar, or, in default of a boar, some of the much less popular ring-tailed apes, and then of reaching the north side, where the bird's nest soup swallows nested. On the rounded top of a knoll, where the boar track led inland, he paused and looked down on the southern shore. Well out to sea on his left hand, the reef on which the frigate had struck, now white with the broken water of a neap at three-quarter ebb, but then invisible beneath a spring-tide flood. Far to his right, the point where a large piece of the wreck had come ashore, left again to the scarred-out inlet to which the wreckage had been towed by the one remaining boat, carefully prized apart, and reassembled in the present elegant ribbed skeleton of the schooner that was to carry them to Batavia as soon as it was planked, decked, and rigged. Well up the slope from this inlet, the camp, under the lee of the forest in which they had sheltered from the typhoon that destroyed the stranded frigate, drowned many of her people, almost all her livestock, and almost all her powder. And then, immediately below him, the broad expanse, firm and level, where the white-clad figures flitted to and fro. White-clad, not so much because this was cricket, as because it was Sunday, with mustering by divisions, necessarily shaved and in a clean shirt, followed by church. It might seem the very height of levity to be playing cricket with the schooner far from finished, with stores very low, and with the little island's resources in coconuts, boars, and ring-tailed apes nearly exhausted. Yet Stephen knew very well what was in Jack Aubrey's mind. The people had behaved extremely well so far, working double tides, but they were not a crew made up solely of man-of-war's men, bred to the service and serving together for years at a time. At least a third had been pressed into the navy. There were several recent drafts, and there were some King's hard bargains, including two or three sea lawyers. Yet, even if they had all been seamen, serving in the navy since the beginning of the war, some relaxation was essential, and they had been looking forward to this match with the liveliest anticipation. The camphor wood, or palm-rib bats, lacked some of the elegance of willow, but the sailmaker had sewed a wholly professional ball, using leather that could be spared from gaff jaws, and the players had swayed away on all top ropes to do their service credit.